This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Checkpoint Intimates.
Yes, that's right. You are listening to Checkpoint Intimates, where two members of the Checkpoint team get together and get real intimate. Real intimate on one particular
topic. Too intimate. Uncomfortably intimate.
So intimate that it kind of makes you feel a little ill.
Yeah.
Now,
can you get off my lap?
Wow. I will sit wherever I want to sit.
Okay.
My name is Cameron, and I'm joined by the lovely Elliot.
I'm here.
Who has no idea about, like, personal space.
No.
Elliot, can you stop?
Well, stop, you know, this is Checkpoint Intimates.
I think we've killed this joke now. Now, on today's episode, we're talking about, we throw around a lot of terminology with gaming, and sometimes not everyone knows all the terminology, and that's fair. There's a lot out there, and it kind of gets created by communities and repurposed. And
oh, yeah. We have so many abbreviations and, like, shorthand, and it's
we love
crazy.
An abbreviation. And so today we're going to talk about roguelikes. When you hear roguelikes, you'll hear two. You'll hear roguelike with a K, and you'll hear roguelite.
You know what's really annoying?
With a T.
I've heard a third. I hear people use the term roguelike-like, which means like a roguelike. And I'm like, this is just insanity. Can you please stop?
I'm offended.
Yeah.
Deep to my core by this. No, so there's a few things that really set these games apart, and they're a genre that was big at one time and then kind of disappeared, and then with the resurgence of indie developers has come back in a big way.
I'd say in the last, like, 6, 7, 8 years, roguelikes have been massive, and I'm so glad that that resurgence happened because they're, like, some of my favorite games now. And they're the kind of games you can pick up and play whenever you want, and you can spend countless hours in them, and they're just a lot of fun.
Well, they also, it creates a kind of more of a pocket experience that is
bite-sized,
able to be expanded on a little bit more. Now, so what are we talking about, Elliot? What are the rules of a roguelike?
So this is super interesting because it's really hard to define.
Yeah.
What we do know, historically speaking, is that roguelikes stemmed from a game called Rogue, believe it or not.
Yes, which came out in the 80s.
Yeah, 1980s. Like, ridiculously old.
Yeah. Old arcade, yeah.
We're talking about a game that used, like, ASCII art. So that's, like, the art used from keyboards to, like, create the world, and it basically created its own genre because what it had was this kind of turn-based movement. It had permadeath, where if you die, you just start from the beginning. There's absolutely no progression, nothing saved, you start again,
which was pretty common in old arcade games because it was a way to get people to keep paying money.
That's true. But what it also had was, like, this randomized generation to the level, so that you were never comfortable. You never knew the exact path to take, because every time you played it, it was a new experience. Mm. And so that was pretty revolutionary back when this game released. And thankfully, through that kind of innovation, we see what we hear now, which is roguelikes, which are games that kind of try to mimic that genre, try to mimic that playstyle. And they'll have the very similar things. They'll always have that kind of permadeath.
Yep.
They'll always have that kind of randomized level generation.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them have turn-based combat anymore, or turn-based movement. And that's kind of part of the reason why people started chucking around terms like roguelite, because it's just one step further removed from what the original genre was.
It was a diet version, if you will.
For sure.
Rogue.
And we even see a lot of games
just
now.
2% rogue.
Yeah. We even see a lot of games now with these kind of progression systems where it's like, yeah, it's still permadeath. You still start from the beginning, but you might have, like, something carry over until your next run so that it doesn't ever feel like you're back to square one. You're kind of just back to square two or back to square three.
And so it's then, in those kind of games, it's then built into the mechanic that you will fail. Failure is a point, and by failing, you will build up the momentum to succeed eventually, because with each failure, you might get something a little bit more to take on to the fight.
And a lot of my favorite games of all time are roguelites. I told you recently that I've been playing a game called Dead Cells, which comes out in August. It's currently Steam Early Access, and it's just absolutely phenomenal. It reminded me why I love this genre so much, because the genre can be so dynamic, right? Like, all those factors that define what a roguelike is, it doesn't actually define what kind of gameplay there is. So you can have, like, first-person shooters that are roguelikes. You can have, like, these action-adventure games that are roguelikes. You can have, like, twin-stick shooters that are roguelikes. And what I've got is just this kind of side-scrolling kind of action platformer.
Yeah.
Which just works so well for the genre.
Well, you say, like, it works in different genres, and I, too, have been playing games recently that fall into roguelites. I've played two. I've been playing Prey Moon Crash, which is a first-person shooter that was announced at E3, and it has this whole thing of, you know, you're in a simulation, and you can earn points that when you die and you come back, you can spend them to start with something a little bit extra. And you've got five characters, and what it is, when one dies, you switch to another one, and then once all die, it's a complete wipe, and you go back to the very beginning.
Yep.
And you can purchase these things to make it a bit easier this time. But then when you go in, enemies are in different places, items are put in different spots, that kind of thing. But then one of the other ones I've been playing that was a kind of a surprising roguelike to me was Cultist Simulator.
Which is
a really interesting game. And it's by the people who did Fallen London. And it's a card game, basically. Card tiles, and then it's all about resource management. And it works kind of like a roguelite as well, because you kind of fail, but you learn things from failing. Like, you know things now. You might not progress with anything extra into the next game, but you have knowledge on how to achieve certain things faster. Mm-hmm. So now you're able to go, right, so I know to find this specific ancient text that will get me to this next thing. If I put these two things together, you know, I can achieve that. So it kind of works like a chemistry set where you're given the elements, and then through the multiple runs and you dying one time after another, you're getting this information so that you basically are learning the mathematics behind what you need to do to achieve. And I think that's a huge part of roguelikes, because it's not just about whatever progression you take in game. It's about what you learn. And it's about the skills that you gain through playing the repetition.
Absolutely.
It can sometimes have a negative effect in terms of those early areas in a game, like a roguelike, can feel repetitive.
You're like, oh, yeah.
I know this.
Look, roguelikes are difficult, but obviously the opening area is always going to be easier than the secondary area, and the secondary area is going to be easier than the tertiary area.
Yeah.
And because of that, yeah, if you're a veteran of the genre, or if you've played this game for 500 hours, which I have in some roguelikes, you're going to blitz through those first few levels because they are made for an easier character, or sorry, a less experienced gamer. But having said that, the kind of randomization that throws into the game means that within those first few levels, you can walk out of that a completely different character than you did in a different run because of just the pickups that you've gotten, or the upgrades that you happen to stumble across, or maybe even the pathway you took. So Dead Cells does a really cool thing where it's like there are multiple pathways and you can go into certain areas, or you can like travel further and go into a different area and like totally bypass certain parts of the game.
Yeah, and it's also that thing though that like while you have to be on your toes because of randomization, you can't deny that you feel like a badass. When you're just like, yeah, well, bam, 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 I'm through that first area. That was true. So cool. I'm so fast. The first time you played it, you're like, oh, God, I don't know what I'm doing.
Some games are absolutely an exception to that, and they are just challenging from the get-go. I know a game called Enter the Gungeon, which is that kind of twin-stick shooter style of Binding of Isaac, except it's much more accurate. Like, it feels like you're definitely like
that
playing
game is
to
ridiculous,
win. You're like dodging bullets left, right, and center. And if you don't get a good gun pickup early, then that game is crushingly difficult. You can come across the first boss and die very easily.
Yeah.
Spelunky, I'd say, is the exact same thing, where the earlier levels are definitely easier, but you can die from just a random arrow trap if you're not paying attention. You cannot blitz through those early levels because you can still die in just like a second, an instant.
In this sense, would you then include something like Minecraft as a roguelike?
No, absolutely not.
Why? Because you get randomly generated into a location and you could be like, oh, here I am in a field with all the things I need, or you could end up being generated into a desert that has nothing and you're dead.
But it's not just the generation. There's progression in Minecraft. Like, you build the structure. If you die, that structure's still there.
But then we're talking about the fact that roguelikes still involve progression within a character's, like, their progression. And we still consider those roguelikes.
No, Minecraft is a survival game. What are you doing?
I'm trying to blur the lines as we do.
Don't you dare blur the lines. They're completely different.
I'm blurring all the lines. Now, roguelikes are really popular right now. Why do you think that is?
I think it's because they are... they're difficult, number one. I think people like difficult games. Dark Souls has proved that. Where people want to be able to challenge themselves. But unlike Dark Souls...
Which I would also consider influenced by roguelite in a way.
Potentially, sure.
You look at that kind of, you die, everyone comes back, you got to work your way up and collect your things again. Mm. Like, there's a little bit of a, I'm not saying it is a roguelike, but I feel like its gameplay mechanics have been influenced by roguelikes.
There's definitely some similarities there. But yeah, people like difficult games. They want to be able to challenge themselves. Roguelikes, you don't, well, I definitely don't. When I die, I'm not like, so annoyed because you expect it. Like, yeah. Death is just part of it, and you just got to pick yourself up and keep moving, learn, and adapt. And I think part
of
that...
inspirational.
Yeah, right? Part of the fun gameplay loop in roguelikes is just, you know, they've got to have good gameplay because you're experiencing it over and over and over again. So if the gameplay's not good, then the game is dead as far as I'm concerned. Unlike the exception maybe being the Binding of Isaac, but whatever, we'll move on from that.
I think as well, a really important part of being a roguelike is also that idea that it needs to be, you die, you're back in.
Immediate.
If you drag out that death, you better believe you've lost your player base. They want to be able to go, that was my error, I'm right back in, I'm going. It's the same thing that would happen with like Cuphead. People didn't get angry about losing bosses because they were able to jump straight back in and go.
Yeah.
You need that in a roguelike. Otherwise, no one wants to play it.
And I think developers have shown the diversity of roguelikes as well. You've got stuff like FTL, Faster Than Light, which is just entirely different from anything else we've been talking about. And one of my favorite games of the genre is a game called Crypt of the Necrodancer, which is a rhythm game that is a roguelike. And is one
of the most
frustrating but also most amazing video games ever, because not only do you have the challenge of a standard roguelike, but everything you do has to be in the beat of the song, because if it's not, you can't move. Like, you miss that beat, but the monsters around you do not miss that beat, and they are one step closer to attacking you. And all of a sudden, like, there is absolutely, your stress just peaks in that game, because you can't stop.
Yep.
Like, you just have to keep moving to that beat.
Yep.
And also, soundtrack is just amazing. So, it's just like, that game will always stand out. And I remember playing it and saying, my God, they can just do anything with this genre, can't they? Like, roguelike is so diverse that you can have Crypt of the Necrodancer, and then you can jump into something completely different.
Have we had a driving game?
Probably.
I'd like to know that, actually. If there's a driving game out there, head to our social media and let us know, because I don't think there is.
I don't know that there has been.
Someone make it now.
Having said that, though, there are so many games out there, and we can't possibly play them all.
That's a good point.
So,
now, I think it's also roguelikes. What would you say, as a fan of roguelikes, outside of the death problem, like, and taking too long to get back into a game, what do you think are some of the pitfalls that developers can go into with a roguelike? I know there's been a few that have come out that people just go,
So
there was that one, I can't remember, it was like Necropolis or something.
Yeah, I never played that one.
And it was kind of like a bit more geometric in its artwork.
I'm not too familiar.
That was a roguelike, and it looked really pretty, but it just was received really poorly in the actual, like, people weren't finding the gameplay super engaging.
So, I recently played a game called City of Brass. This game was at PAX in 2017, I believe, and it's kind of something I've had my eye on for a while, because it looks really pretty. It's a roguelike, and it does things differently. So, it's going for the whole Knights of Arabia aesthetic to it.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of whips, a lot of mummies, and a lot of temples.
Had lots of, like, traps.
But I never found myself too engaged in it. One of the big pitfalls that City of Brass fell into for me was, and it goes back to what I was talking about just before, where the gameplay has to be really captivating, because if it's not, you're going through that same gameplay loop over and over and over again, and if you're not engaged in that, then there's no point playing a roguelike.
Yeah.
And I think, like, a big problem of City of Brass was that it didn't feel fun, but it also didn't feel accurate. Like, sometimes I would whip a skeleton and it wouldn't register. It was first person melee combat, which is something that's really, really difficult to pull off.
Yep.
I've also just came off playing Warhammer Vermintide 2, so
which had fantastic
first person melee combat, and I was just like just disappointed that this didn't even come close to holding up. The game felt a bit slow, and like there was no momentum to my character's movements. So all in all, it was just a bit like lackluster. And I think that's what it is. Like, roguelikes, you need to have a fun gameplay loop, because if you don't, that's it.
I think you also have to have, and these in the roguelikes that I have played, I've definitely felt this, it has to be fun to die. Like, the death has to be, like, enjoyable, not just like a, okay, yeah, whatever, you died. You have to get some kind of, like, frustration from the grind and be like, oh, I'm so close. Or that's like my favorite are the ones that make your death hilarious, where you get to just like laugh at the fact that you've died. And you're just like, I can't believe, oh my God, I can't believe that. What? Oh my God. And you get that kind of where the death is properly thought out rather than just like, oh, okay, now you're done.
Mm.
And I think City of Brass, from what I saw of it, you just kind of
died in as whatever. Yeah, it was just whatever. A bit, yeah. One game, you bring that up, and I totally agree. I think there needs to be some importance to your death, and I think a lot of gamers will really connect with that, because if there's not, you just kind of disconnect, and it's like, ugh, I just can't be bothered anymore. But like a game like Rogue Legacy, where you die, and the next time you play, you're like the child of the deceased, and yes. you gain some of the...
I did that as well.
Yeah, that's true, which is another game I played recently. But Rogue Legacy specifically, you keep some of the traits of your ancestor, and so you can kind of like move down and build on your traits as you go, and you make sure, like, you don't want to pick the character who has this really negative trait, because that could be passed down.
Yeah.
So it's not only just affecting that current run, but it could be affecting all future runs as well.
All future runs could have that gimp foot.
Exactly. And nobody wants a gimp foot. But that game also did a really good job of where you're kind of building, and it had this persistence where you could like spend gold to unlock these bonuses that will affect every run thereafter.
Again, not entirely a roguelike, but probably inspired by the gameplay. I liked the way that in... Do you remember Zombie for the Wii U?
I never played it.
And the whole point was like, if you died, you died, and you got a new character, and you'd Zombie go out into the world. Yeah, Zombie U.
Yeah.
And you'd go out to the world, and your previous character is now a zombie shambling around.
Actually, I like that, though.
I love that. And you had to kill them to get your backpack off them, because you knew there was good stuff in there.
That reminds me of Hollow Knight, which did a similar thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Where if you die, there's like this shadow version of you, just in the world.
And it's similar to State of Decay that just recently came out. State of Decay 2. They did the same thing. If your character dies out in the world, you pick a new character, but your character's out there shambling around as an enemy. And I love that kind of thing. That thing, I think, makes it work really well. And so I think roguelikes are definitely... they're a staple, especially in indie development.
Yep.
I think indies really like them, because I feel like they're because of the more repetitiveness of them, it's easier to create that kind of pocket experience with them.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I don't think we'll ever see a really big AAA roguelike.
We got Prey Moon Crash.
But even that is a spin-off from the DLC. I don't think we'll ever see like AAA, you know, Ubisoft's like, here's our new roguelike. I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
Maybe some of their side stuff, but it'll never be like their poster child. I'm trying to think of
the biggest like example, but you're right, I'm struggling.
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever see it in the AAA market. But that, you know, the indie is kind of... The indie market fills the void that we need, that the AAA will never touch on. And this is just one of those genres that I think is an awesome addition to that. But thank you for joining me today, Elliot, to talk about roguelike or roguelite or roguelite-like.
Yeah.
It's like,
I hope we defined it, but now I'm just more confused than the beginning.
It's like that thing where it's like, do you like me or do you like me?
Oh, I definitely roguelike like you.
I definitely roguelike like you as well.
Oh, thanks,
Elliot.
Cam. You can get back on my lap.
You've been listening to Checkpoint Intimates. Thank you, Elliot.
Thank you.
And I have been Cameron, and you can check out more from Checkpoint at checkpointgaming.net.
This has been a Joycast of Checkpoint for Joy 94.9. If you like this podcast, please rate us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.